This is episode 313 of That Shakespeare Life. If you love That Shakespeare Life and want to hear even more episodes, you can sign up to be a patron of our show. Patrons get access to over 150 additional episodes not available on public listening platforms, along with special insider Shakespeare history extras. Find out more and sign up today at patreon.com/thatshakespearelife, and stay tuned after the episode for even more details.
Hi, I'm Helen Hackett, author of Women and Romance Fiction in the English Renaissance and of The Elizabethan Mind. Another great method for studying the life of William Shakespeare includes listening to this. It's That Shakespeare Life with my friend, Cassidy Cash.
The link with Shakespeare is phenomenally exciting. It's a 1417 to 1420 floor. It's now, we're told, the largest area of 15th century timber frame flooring left in certainly in England and probably in Great Britain as well. But then, of course, you've got this link with this stage area in the venue. And of course, it's a venue that William Shakespeare and his company played. So suddenly you're looking at the boards on which Shakespeare performed. And that's unique. That's where it becomes very exciting, really.
Welcome to That Shakespeare Life with Cassidy Cash. Cassidy believes that if you desire to successfully learn or perform Shakespeare's plays, then understanding the real life and history of William Shakespeare himself is a must. That Shakespeare Life is the podcast that helps you go beyond the curtain of some of Shakespeare's most iconic works and explore the world of early modern England as Shakespeare would have lived it, learning from the writers, historians, and performers who know it best. And now, here's Cassidy.
In October of 2023, the Norfolk Guildhall at King's Lynn, London, was undergoing a big refurbishment when 600-year-old oak floorboards were discovered beneath the modern floor. A religious house in the 15th century, the site became a performance venue by 1593, hosting, among others, Shakespeare's acting company, according to Guildhall accounts. That discovery means that these floorboards could have held the footsteps of William Shakespeare himself. Here today to tell us about the floorboards, the history, and what's going on with the find today is our guest and the creative director at the Guildhall, Tim Fitzhyam. Tim Fitzhyam is the Borough Council of King's Lynn and West Norfolk Creative Director, where he was appointed to oversee the revival of St. George's Guildhall in King's Lynn. You can find out more about Tim and links to the King's Lynn Guildhall in the show notes for today's episode. Hello, Tim. Welcome to That Shakespeare Life.
Thank you. Thanks very much for having me on. It's nice to be here.
So I'm excited to dive into this refurbishment here. What was going on at the Guildhall when you discovered these boards in the first place?
Okay, so the Guildhall is what we call in the UK the oldest working theatre in the country, with the first recorded performance in 1445. But it's not been perhaps very well kept up in the last few years. In fact, it almost closed. And that's when I swung into action to try and help to form part of the effort to keep it open. As part of that effort, we were very successful and we managed to win some funding from a thing called the UK Towns Fund, which is a UK government initiative for places that are in need of a bit of financial support. And we got this money and we've been trying to use it to firstly discover more about the venue in terms of putting forward archaeology so that then when we do refurbish the venue and we do make it better, we won't do something wrong or silly or against the building, if you like. So as part of this funding, we managed to get in some archaeologists, and I was really keen that they start by putting together the most incredible survey that this theatre's ever had in the whole 600-year history of the building. So they started by surveying the theatre space and then the spaces underneath it and then the spaces all around it and then building up this incredible archaeological picture of what was going on throughout the history of the site. And of course, it's a very long history. You know, it's a 600-year-old building. And so one of the things that I then got to look at was my suspicions around this amazing floor. That's really how we ended up discovering a lot more about the site in a nutshell.
I mean, that's a phenomenal amount of history. I know in Europe and the time frame for historical buildings are much older than they are here in the US. We're pretty young as a nation. But the 600-year history, I mean, that's phenomenal even for the buildings that are there to have that much time to go back through and do this survey as you're talking about.
Yeah.
Were you expecting to find old pieces of the previous structure underneath the flooring, or were you surprised that this had survived that long?
I didn't know what we might find. I mean, when you start letting archaeologists loose on anything, you know, you just have to sort of go, they're going to find stuff, hopefully.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. And I was always just really excited about what we might find and what might turn up. The building started really its history on that site with a royal charter in 1406. So, I mean, it really is a very old building indeed, and very loved within King's Lynn and West Norfolk and in the country at large, really. Although those people that know about it, I should say, I think you always hope that you're going to discover something really fantastic, really phenomenal. And when we started taking up the layers of flooring, I'd always believed that the floor that I could see glimpses of was the original floor. But it's all well and good for me to say, like, as a kid or as an adult, I think that's the original floor. It's quite another thing to get a really super qualified archaeologist to come in and go, yes, it's the original floor, and this is the reason why. And I think that's the difference. It's that kind of academic authority approach, isn't it? It's like him going, I've looked at the documentary evidence, I've looked at the scientific evidence, I've looked at the construction evidence, and I have the most experience in this area, and I say it's the original floor.
To get that rubber stamp, of approval.
You kind of go, wow, okay, that's really exciting. And then, of course, the link with Shakespeare is phenomenally exciting. It's a 1417 to 1420 floor. It's now, we're told, the largest area of 15th century timber frame flooring left in certainly in England and probably in Great Britain as well. But then, of course, you've got this link with this stage area in the venue. And of course, it's a venue that William Shakespeare and his company played. So suddenly you're looking at the boards on which Shakespeare performed. And that's unique. That's where it becomes very exciting, really.
Well, tell us about some of this evidence that you're referencing, where they did go in and determine that, yes, this is definitely the original flooring. What were some of the processes that were used there to make that determination?
Sure. Well, firstly, we've got the tree ring dating evidence. And this is brilliant archaeology stuff, dendrochronology, it's called. And they take tiny little core samples of the beams of the wood, and they take them away. And trees grow at a different rate depending on the weather. And so when you look back in history, you can see that the rings in the trees are slightly different widths apart. And this is like microscope stuff. You know, you need to really get it under a microscope. But you can see that the tree, maybe it was a winter that was slightly colder and the tree doesn't grow so much, or it was slightly warmer and the tree grows a bit more. And what they've done it throughout history is they've sequenced all of this tree ring data to provide a complete scope of dates of trees and when they were felled. And we know when you're working oak that you need to kind of work it relatively quickly after it's felled, so after it's chopped down. So they managed to date the beams in the floor to between 1417 and 1428. So we know that those beams had to be worked and had to be put in place relatively quickly after they were felled. So we're looking at a floor that is 14 something. And especially with the fiddly bits of carving, that's quite difficult as well. So there's a lot of work gone into this. So firstly, you've got the scientific data. Secondly, you've got the documentary evidence. You know, we just mentioned the Royal Charter, which is in 1406. If you're given a plot of land in that period in 1406, it's highly likely that you'd start building up cash reserves to then start going into a major construction project. And 1417 to 1428, that's pretty consistent with a Royal Charter of sort of 1406. And then finally, there's the construction evidence. And that is that this floor is absolutely integral to the building that surrounds it. You can't really take the floor out. It's kind of absolutely part of the building. And we know from the brick data of the building, the brick evidence that we've got, because it's a red brick building, that the bricks are again early 1400. And so we know we've got early 1400 brick underneath beams, which we've had dated at 1417 to 1425, let's say, 1428. And then we know that we've got the documentary evidence that links into all of that. So it's about putting together all these pieces of the jigsaw puzzle to eventually be able to say, yes, this is your oak floor from the early 1400s.
To put this in perspective for people that are not following the numbers as clearly, am I right that this is the reign of Henry V, Henry VI, and into Edward VI? This is this time period that we're talking about.
You're bang on. So the Royal Charter is from Henry IV, whose son was Henry V, famously Agincourt in 1415. And then there's a second royal charter from the for the venue, which is in the 1540s, and that's from Edward IV. So all of those guys that you're mentioning are very much surrounding this venue. Yeah.
Well, when we think of theaters that Shakespeare performed in, I don't think Norfolk Guildhall shows up on our list alongside the Curtain and the Swan or the Globe. And so I was surprised that the evidence here was showing that Shakespeare had performed here. So tell us more about that documentary evidence. What do you have that places Shakespeare here?
Sure. So there's been quite a lot of work that's been done on Elizabethan touring circuits. So that's the first part of it, where we used to just think, gosh, they're in London and maybe there was a different, slightly more rubbish set of players going out and touring around the rest of the country, playing, I don't know, Coventry or wherever it happens to be. However, now it seems that actually there was quite a defined touring circuit that was going on. And there's some great books about that that people can look into, Playing Companies, is one by Andrew Gurr. And the touring circuits that went on in the UK are interesting. They normally go in a loop, and they normally go from London and they go out to, let's say, Norwich, and then they come down to, let's say, Southwold, Aldborough, Ipswich, and then they go back into London. King's Lynn is slightly different to that, because it's clear that King's Lynn had so much money in that period, King's Lynn, Norfolk, that it was worth these touring companies going all the way out to King's Lynn in a straight line and coming all the way back from King's Lynn in a straight line. So it was clearly somewhere that they had identified these Elizabethan playing companies as having a lot of money. So the second point about this is that King's Lynn has this socking great guild hall, and the guilds were dissolved, as you probably know, by Henry VIII and his son. And they then were left with these massive buildings. The local town council essentially would have these massive buildings. And it's like, well, what on earth are we going to do with these huge buildings? We've got no idea what we're going to do with them. And so eventually these two things sort of came together, because the guilds were dissolved in the 1540s. The touring companies start coming out in the 1580s. So there's kind of 40-year gap where town councils are kind of going, what are we going to do with the massive building, before Elizabethan touring companies start turning up and going, we could do shows in the building. And so you get these wonderful companies coming to towns in the middle of nowhere, like King's Lynn in Norfolk. And we then have the books that the town council, the corporation, used to pay money to get these actors to come. So they used to try and attract them to town by offering them essentially travel expenses to come up to King's Lynn and to start playing in their theatre, in their big massive guild hall that they had left over. And that's very much what happens in King's Lynn. And we've got a huge list, because the books in King's Lynn, the documentary survival is really good, of really incredible Elizabethan touring companies. So we then start seeing Queen Elizabeth I's players, her playing company, coming to King's Lynn almost on a yearly basis at one point in the 1580s. And then in 1592-93, when the London theatres are shut due to the plague, we get that magical entry, which is the Earl of Pembroke's Men. And that's the company that in 1592-93, Shakespeare is most associated with. He's certainly writing plays for them. And at that point, we also know that Shakespeare is a player, not just a writer, because he gets this bad review, the Upstart Crow reference, which is kind of trying to be nasty about him, actually. But what it does is it refers to him as a player, not just as a writer. And so we've got 1592-93, we've got the reference of King's Lynn paying the Earl of Pembroke's men to come. We know that all the London theatres are shut because of the plague, so he can't be performing in London, and we know that Shakespeare's on stage. And then we've got two other absolutely tantalising pieces of information. One is that Robert Armin, who is William Shakespeare's comedian, is born in King's Lynn, one street away from the theatre that I'm now creative director of. So you've got a direct link between somebody that absolutely genuinely knew Shakespeare and this theatre. And then secondly, we've got two books published in Shakespeare's lifetime that tell the same story. And the story that they tell relates to, as they say, the theatre in Lynn, Norfolk. And it relates to a story about a woman sitting on the front row of the theatre with her new second husband and watching a play called The Murder of Friar Francis. And we're told in the book that at the point that Friar Francis gets murdered, the woman screams out, "I did it. I killed my husband." And it turns out that the woman had killed her first wealthy husband to marry her younger second husband. And seeing the murder of Friar Francis on stage makes her scream out in guilt. And then we're told that this is something that Shakespeare hears and then puts into Hamlet.
I was going to say, it sounds like that's where Hamlet came from. Yeah,
that's right. So that's an event that occurs in the theatre in Lynn, Norfolk. So we're fairly confident on our Shakespearean heritage because, of course, of all these links. Again, it's like the floor. You're kind of taking tiny bits of evidence. You're putting them all together to try and construct the best possible result, in a way, the most truthful result. And that's what we believe we've got.
I mean, any one of those pieces of evidence would have been sufficient for me, I think, to follow the idea that Shakespeare would have performed there. But I think to have all of those together is certainly substantial.
Yeah.
That's exciting to think that you're standing where Shakespeare stood.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's really amazing.
What's happening to the floorboards now? I mean, are they going to remain visible after the restoration? Are people going to be able to see these? Or what's the plan with the site now that you know about the boards?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. So we have a design team. In England, we have 7 stages of our architectural planning for any project. We just finished stage 1 when we found the floor. And we were just about to unveil stage 2. And so we were really excited about this. And then we found the floor. Bam, suddenly this enormous discovery, this incredible thing that is so rare. And so suddenly our design team, we had to pull them all back in and say, guys, we know you've done all the work on stage 2. We're really sorry, but we've got this massive thing and it's going to be important. And so at the moment, we're in the stage where we're trying really hard to work out how we can, A, show the floor off and share the floor with everybody and let people enjoy the floor and the magical power of it in some ways. But then B, protect the floor and keep it safe and make sure it's safe for another 600 years going forward. At the moment, there's a lot going on in terms of advice that we're receiving and kind of help that we're getting to try and let us know how we can best keep this safe, but also share it with everybody. So the answer is absolutely at the moment, I don't know is the true answer. But what I do know is that our intention is to try and share as much of it as possible with as many people as possible.
Well, I know we're all very excited to stay in touch and follow this story as it develops. Where's the best place to stay in touch with King's Lynn so we can know when it's available that we can come and see the boards for ourselves?
Absolutely. So we have a website called stgeorgesguildhall.com and we have a mailing list coming off that as well so we can keep people up to date on that. I sometimes put little bits and bobs on Twitter or Instagram if I can think of something useful to say and try and put pictures up there if people want to see those as well if I can. So there are ways of definitely staying in touch with the project. And of course, if anyone is in King's Lynn or in Norfolk, then please go along. The volunteers are there. They will show you around and they'll try and explain a bit more about this fantastic theatre to you.
That is fantastic. We will place links in the show notes for today's episode so that you can join the mailing list at stgeorgesguildhall.com as well as follow them on Twitter and Instagram to stay in touch. And please do go by if you're in the area. What an exciting opportunity that is. Now, Tim, we ask our guests, because you are the topic expert here, what are some of your recommended resources that you can suggest we use to explore this further? Obviously, coming to King's Lynn is at the top of the list, but are there others? You mentioned a book by Andrew Gurr, I believe.
That's true. That's about playing companies generally. But Andrew Gurr's written lots of different books. He's a very respected Shakespeare author. He has written about the theatre layouts in the Elizabethan touring theatre. He's been very good on that and all sorts of other stuff. There's a nice book called The Archaeology of Shakespeare, which is quite cool. And people might want to have a look at that. Again, that's about theatres in the time of Shakespeare using archaeology to get to it. So it is kind of on point for what we're doing. It's about the excavations at the Rose, I think, and the Curtain Theatre in London. So that's another one I can recommend, definitely. And then for Robert Armin, there isn't a lot of information out there about Robert Armin. He is something of an enigma, but there is a book by somebody called John Leslie Hodson, which is, again, it's not a new book, but it's a very good book about Robert Armin, and it'll give you a nice overview of Robert Armin and his life, although it is, I have to say, 70 years old. So it's probably about time there was another one, I guess.
So there you go. You've been handed a book project. Anyone wants to write about Robert Armin, we're in need.
Absolutely. No, Armin is fantastic. And what's interesting about him is that he is the first comedian to write about comedy. So Armin himself wrote books. So you can read Robert Armin's work, which is really exciting. And there are reprints of Robert Armin's stuff as well, which you can get hold of. One of his books was called Fool Upon Fool. And it's Robert Armin writing about fools that he's heard about or met in the time of Shakespeare. So it's a really rare thing to happen. It's he really is sort of the first person to write about comedy in the English-speaking theatre world, certainly. And so he's kind of unusual for that.
We will place links to these resources in the show notes for today's episode so you can go directly to each of these and learn more about this wonderful history and archaeology in Shakespeare's lifetime. So make sure you visit the show notes to find those. Now, Tim, we ask everyone this next question here at That Shakespeare Life, and that's, what's the one book you would take with you on a deserted island? My friends in England tell me I'm supposed to allow you the complete works of Shakespeare and a copy of the Bible, so your choice would be in addition to those.
Wow. What would I love to read on a desert island? I definitely love Don Quixote. That's a book. I think it's interesting, isn't it? Because Shakespeare's just this incredible person doing wonderful plays. Meanwhile, in Spain, you've got an equally extraordinary person writing what is essentially one of the first kind of novels, Don Quixote, the right, you know, that wonderful book about this man that goes insane and, you know, loses his mind, really. And so that is a joyful book to read, because you can kind of, when you read Don Quixote, you can see Cervantes not only working out the story, but working out the entire form of what we know as novels. You know, he works out chapters, and so he sort of works them out as he goes along. And chapter one's just a bit shorter than chapter two. And then he goes, oh, chapters are okay, I might make chapter three a bit longer. And so it's sort of this kind of glorious crossover, really, Don Quixote. I also do love Geoffrey Chaucer. I'd quite like to take him with me as well. And there's a brilliant American book called Confederacy of Dunces, which I really like as well. I've read that one.
Yes.
Yeah. So that'd be another favorite, I have to say.
Those would be good choices for your deserted island. I think you'd be well set up there.
I should probably take some sort of manual to living on a deserted island. That would be the clever choice.
You'd be surprised how many people tack that on after this question.
Yes.
Everyone they pick this beautiful piece of literature and then they say, oh, well, I might need to eat.
Yeah, build a fire or, yeah, yes. So, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Well, what's next for you? What are you working on now that you're excited about?
Well, I am, having said everything earlier, I am doing a PhD about Robert Armin, because I do really love Robert Armin. Yeah. And I'm doing that in Stratford-upon-Avon at the Shakespeare Institute, which is lovely. And so that's a big love for me at the moment. So I get to talk a lot about Armin, which I really like.
Oh, you'll have to touch base with us when you finish your PhD and come back and tell us about your thesis. That'll be fun.
Yeah, it is good. Yeah, it's great fun.
Tim Fitzhyam, thank you so much for being here and sharing the history of this amazing find at King's Lynn Theatre in Norfolk. We have really enjoyed getting to share this with you, and I appreciate you sharing some time here with us.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on.
As always, there are visuals and extra artifacts that go along with our conversation today that you can see, and they are packed into the show notes for today's episode. Along with these visuals, you'll also see direct links to the resources Tim recommends today and a direct link to King's Lynn Guildhall so you can explore more of what's going on there. Find all of these things at CassidyCash.com/episode313. That's CassidyCash.com/EP313. If you enjoy walking around in the turn of the 17th century to explore the life as Shakespeare would have lived it, then you will love joining us on Patreon. We have a special insider Shakespeare History Club over there, and all of our patrons get to see behind-the-scenes content and listen to over 150 additional episodes of our show not available on public listening platforms. There's also video versions of our podcast, printable educator resources, and a collection of digital history activity kits that let you try out some of the games, recipes, and crafts straight from the life of William Shakespeare. If this sounds like fun to you, then find out more and sign up today at patreon.com/thatshakespearelife. That's patreon.com/thatshakespearelife. That Shakespeare Life is researched and produced by me, Cassidy Cash. Our audio engineer is Gary Mayholm. That's it for this week. Thank you for listening. I'm Cassidy Cash, and I hope you learned something new about the Bard. I'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to That Shakespeare Life. As always, the best conversations happen after the episode over at CassidyCash.com. Become a part of a vibrant Shakespeare conversation by adding your voice over at the website. Until next time, remember, when you want to know William Shakespeare, you have to go behind the curtain and into That Shakespeare Life.